You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
Welcome to another episode of the Ivy Podcast. Today's guest is Lori Rollinson, who is a Senior Vice President of Innovation and Strategy at BGIS, a global leader in the provision of facility management, project delivery, energy and sustainability, asset management, workplace advisory, and real estate services. Lori and I had discussed various topics on innovation, strategies for productivity, and much more. We hope that you enjoy our discussion. And as always, please feel free to leave your feedback in the comment section. Thanks.
Lori, welcome to the Ivy Podcast. I appreciate you finding time to join us today. Can you tell us a little bit more about the services that BGIS provides and what is your role within the organization?
Well, sure. And first of all, thank you so much for having me as a guest on your show. I'm delighted to be part of it. My role is Senior Vice President of Strategy and Innovation for a company called BGIS. We are a small global facilities management company, primarily engineering-led. We're in Canada, the U.S., Australia, and New Zealand, predominantly. We've got just under 8,000 employees globally, and we provide a wide range of integrated facilities management services related to, you know, project delivery, capital planning, asset management, workplace solutions and design, and we even do, in some geographies, little bit of transactions and portfolio strategy, that sort of thing. But our core business is very technical. We do business in, we have a lot of business in data centers, critical environments. We're really technical. We show really well in the technical environment. And my role is really different from our core business. It's to help reimagine our industry, our own business offering, and help transform our clients. So I'm basically like an in-house consultant that is a coach for ourselves, our industry, and our clients that I help with big transformations. There's so much change coming that to be able to have, you know, different specialized resources, we have really good operational people, but it takes a very different skill set to be able to do transformation and operationalize innovation. And how do you even get started? So I work in concert with a number of the stakeholders that I just mentioned to be able to, you know, implement the future today is the term that we use. Yeah.
That's fascinating, and thank you for providing a little more intel about the company and your role within the organization. Sounds very exciting. I'm fascinated by, you know, I've been following you primarily on LinkedIn, and you post quite often on different strategies, a lot of those focus around increasing productivity. I'm curious, what are your most favorite and effective ways to sustain productivity at high levels that you use on a daily basis for yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that seems to be the holy grail of a lot of workplace strategies. So what's really interesting is that I'm in real estate, essentially, a section or a sector of real estate, but I've been studying so much on workplace psychology and how to create a great culture at work. And of course, premises are a big contributor to the brand of an organization, employee productivity and satisfaction. So I think it's just interesting how everything is converging and crossing over between real estate, HR, and IT. But you asked me what is, and so I've got the, what you just described is like, oh my gosh, I could really talk all day about this. But the one tip that I really is my favorite to understand and enable productivity is a very democratized approach. So you ask employees, what would make you more productive? You get their suggestions, you rank them, you assign a budget. Of course, nobody has an unlimited budget, but you're transparent about where the budget cuts off. Let's say you get 70 suggestions and the top 11 is what I can afford. You communicate openly what you can afford and what you can't. I'm going to guess that the suggestions that you will get, I know as an executive in our company, I'm always surprised as to what employees say is their barrier to productivity. But because of the war for talent, companies realize the number one expense of any company is people. And if you have people that are not productive, That is the biggest inefficiency in your organization. So how to hack productivity, and productivity is personal, right? There's introverts and extroverts and people that are boomers and Gen Z and everything in between. It's very personal. So you have to ask people, provide them with choices, and do what they ask. And it's often not what the ivory tower people think is going to enable productivity, but it's highly personal and you have to ask people. So that's my best tip.
That's great. Simple, to the point, and yet a lot of times probably overlooked. So I like that. In your role within the organization, and I'm sure, you know, in your personal life as well, you've been in charge of innovation and strategy, specifically around innovation. What strategies, and maybe something more methodical that you employ that consistently help you come up with innovative ways to solve certain problems?
Yeah, this is a great question. So I think I have a unique approach, or somewhat unique approach, towards innovation. Because I work with engineers, you don't get away with working with engineers without measuring everything. So we have a very closed loop and evidence-based approach to innovation. And we have this flywheel, I'll call it, where there's a process where we hold our great ideas accountable for performance. So the first chevron is always starting with goals. So what do we want to achieve? And I think this is the most important thing that's often overlooked, because there's so much shiny object syndrome, right? There's so many cool things out there, but don't implement it for the sake of cool. Like, make sure that it's going to solve the problem that you need. And ideas come from everywhere. I mean, we have programs for our employees and our vendors and our supply chain, and ideas can come from everywhere. Then you pilot them. You measure their evidence-based progress against your goals. And then if it's effective, that you expand. But it's constantly this, Gord, our CEO, Gord Hicks, has this expression called inspect what you expect. And again, very engineering. He's very influenced by the Malcolm Baldrige methodology, which is very evidence-based. And I find sometimes we talk about these big ideas, but we don't actually apply them, and we don't actually see if they act like how they actually do. So we have a philosophy called practical innovation. We anchor the innovation or the solution in what matters, again, starting with goals. And then we have a very methodical way of implementing what's important to you in a very measured way. And things that matter, you know, one of my pet peeves is I go to these conferences, some of these, like most companies that I work with don't have these big unlimited budgets. And oh my gosh, you hear about these budgets and I get so envious, but that's not reality of most of us, right? So I always like to find ways that we can, you know, take these big ideas and break them down into practical things that we can actually implement. I'm tired of going to these conferences and hearing about these big ideas that sound like so futuristic, like they're a Keanu Reeves movie or something like that. And like, and then you go back to your day job and you do the same thing. And it doesn't move the needle at all. I mean, it's cool, it's interesting, but you don't actually do anything about it. So I'm fascinated. Again, I'm rubbed off working with engineers. I'm really fascinated how you take those big ideas and actually implement them against what matters. So it allows a lot of discipline and focus, because, oh my gosh, it's the Wild West out there. Like, we're inundated with shiny objects and new things and change and solutions. So if you start with what matters, your goals, and really look at more of a two-year view, which includes this current fiscal year and next, then you will really move the needle forward in what matters to you and not get caught up in this long-term kind of, you know, academic speak. It really helps you implement and make a difference today.
Very interesting. And to take that a little bit further, during my studies at HBS, you know, Harvard's very famous for the case study method and a lot of that. Yeah. We had numerous case studies on the most innovative companies out there. I'm curious, what companies do you admire the most with respect to innovation, and why? What are some of the things that they do that others don't?
Yeah, gosh, that's like, oh my gosh. That's like picking your favorite. It's like picking your favorite kid, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess I could, let me narrow it down to three. And again, I feel hard. It's hard picking just three, but the first one I would say is Google. And that one might seem more obvious, but I love how they have such a data-driven, evidence-based, automated fulfillment chain. Like, I'm so in awe of their ability to capture data. And, you know, I love data, again, working with engineers, but you're able to cut through a lot of the noise and opinion with facts. And I really love how they do evidence-based action. And they've really mastered how to harvest data, how to leverage data and enable things in ways that really create advantages for stakeholders. And I know there's other, you know, some of these companies, there's some controversial aspects to it, but I really have a great respect for them and their approach. The second one I would say, for very different reasons, I would say Disney. And this goes back to the inception of Disney. Disney is an amazing company to me because of the training that they give to their employees and how they make you feel. Like, there's all kinds of amusement parks, right? There's, you know, Darien Lake, Six Flags, whatever. There's all kinds of them. And they all have great rides and they all have great junk food. You know, there's a lot of similarities there. But when you go to Disney, you actually feel magical. The training that they give their employees is to touch the lives and the hearts of people. And like Maya Angelou says, it's not necessarily what somebody said, it's how they made you feel. I think I've probably just bumbled that quote, but you get the intent. And they are really great at hospitality training, which is starting to cross over into the corporate world. So the other thing I'm doing is designing a lot of employee experience programs. It's, again, how do you feel culture? And it's the difference between you going to a two-star hotel or a five-star hotel, a two-star workplace or a five-star workplace, a two-star amusement park or a five-star amusement park. So I love the training that they've provided. And my third one is, and again, this is not in any order, is Alibaba. Alibaba is a huge company in Asia that, through vertical integration, they started very similar to Amazon in, you know, more like a trade marketplace. They're in everything now. And I think I'm watching them from more like a fintech disruption because of the vertical integration they've had and other services that they've offered. You know, the day that they decided to get into banking, I think that they became a bigger bank than Wells Fargo. And I think that they did that through WeChat, which I think is the similar chat app. And forgive me, I don't have all the details in front of me, but I'm paraphrasing a little bit. But I'm just really in awe of the vision that Jack Ma has to be able to expand and vertically integrate that organization into other service offerings. And I think we're in for a really wild ride in North America because of the methodologies that he's pioneered. And they really are disruptive and not just different, not just innovative, but disruptive. And I see a lot of organizations in North America starting to emulate the approach that they've taken. So imagine if like Microsoft or Apple or Amazon got into banking. Like, they become one of the biggest banks in the world, and they've got the cash flow for it. So the model that Alibaba has is remarkable to me. So those are probably my top three companies that I admire. But there's so many that I admire for different reasons.
All right, man. Great examples. Great examples. I can definitely relate. Your own website, LoriRollinson.com, I came across it. It's a great resource library, almost, you know, of a lot of different, you know, useful material and publications on innovation and strategy. You post a lot. Curious, what motivates you to share your knowledge, you know, so in such an extensive way, and how does that help you in your professional career?
Oh, thank you for that. I'm glad that it was of service to you. And it's all free, LoriRollinson.com, or follow me on LinkedIn because I'll often push some updates out, you know, free resources. I think a couple of things. I'm just the super nerd. I really love our industry and our profession and what we do. And I don't have a television. I've just always, like, I love to learn. I love to read. And even on my holidays, like, I'll read a business book. So super, super nerdy. But I share the real nuggets that I find freely and openly, because I'm really worried about the ability for our industry to keep up and keep ahead, and the great people in our industry. So I really want people to get a career advantage and not be left behind. So I share that openly to the development and progress of the great people in our industry. And then the other thing is, I guess, I do a lot of speaking engagements on behalf of our company, and I would often find myself referring to or referencing the same thing. And so now what I do is sort of the lazy approach is, you know, I'll mention a book, or, Lori, what are you reading right now? Are there top book references, or what are your favorite things right now? Just go to my website. It's all there. There's a newsletter you can follow where I push it all out. So it's kind of like a resource library that I can point people to consistently if they want to, if I'm distributing something or sharing something, that they can just go there. And it's just like easier than keeping up with all the emails sometimes.
Right. And for our listeners, and Lori's not kidding, if you guys follow her on LinkedIn, you probably don't need to read news or other websites. She posts a lot, so a lot of really useful material. For when it comes, you mentioned briefly in one of your in your previous responses something around people and talent. When hiring for BGIS, for the candidates that interview with you, I'm curious: do you structure your interviews in a more traditional way, or do you get creative? And what do you look for in some of the responses?
Yeah, that's a great question. And interviewing is evolving, and it is as much of an art as it is science. But I do tend to look for non-traditional characteristics. I wouldn't say I'm like some of those kooky interviews that ask, you know, why is a manhole cover round and stuff like that. I don't get into that. I try to get to know the person a little bit more and what kind of a person they are. Because, as you know, it's not just your IQ, like what you know and what you can memorize. I've worked with some really brilliant people that were complete jerks and were very disruptive in business. So I actually look a lot more for social intelligence, political intelligence, people that solve problems versus create them, and can really influence. So I always test for ability to influence. That's a big part of it. So, like, I'll get somebody that will give me a resume, and they look like they're, you know, should be, you know, president of a company. They've got so many degrees. But I look at how have they applied that knowledge and what difference have they made. That's important. So people that have 6 or 7 degrees and wonder why their career is plateauing, you know, what other degrees should I take? No, it's not about how many degrees you have. I've known people that don't even have MBAs, and they are out there killing it. And it's because they're really savvy about influence and political intelligence and social intelligence and emotional intelligence. And more so in the future, those skills are more important. Problem solving, critical thinking, than what you know. Because I think artificial intelligence and a lot of technologies are going to start to help us keep up with the learning curve. Like, the things that we're learning today are not going to be relevant in 10 years. I read a statistic, I talk about this in some of my speaking engagements too, that 80% of the technologies we're going to be using by 2030 haven't been invented yet. So it's not what you know today, it's your ability to be a continuous learner and a problem solver and curious. All of those are an imperative for the future. If we're going to undergo so much change will never happen as slowly as it is today. I look for those other correct characteristics, because when I was in high school, I learned how to do computers with punch cards. Yes, I'm that old. So if I hadn't grown and evolved, I would be a dinosaur. I would have been a dinosaur by the time I was 30, right? And this generation that is in university now will be like Moore's Law, even more compressed. So, you know, people in university right now might have two or three different completely different careers based on technologies that haven't even been invented yet. So your ability to learn, be a continuous learner, and the ability to affect and influence. I think our best intelligence as humans is not artificial. And machine learning can't replicate creativity and a lot of the critical thinking things that really make humans so different. And those are some of the characteristics I look for. And quite often I do 360 interviews because team compatibility is important. So can you work together effectively? Will you respect people's different opinions and personalities? Or will you use that to create drama and conflict? And I think people that can solve problems versus create problems are really the magic it factor for what I look for in hiring.
Excellent. And for our listeners, if you guys are interviewing at BGIS and with Lori, there you go. There's some insider information for you, what she's looking for. But on a serious note, definitely thank you for sharing that. And I can relate on numerous points that you have made, not only from that technical domain expertise, because we do that for a living at ProSource IT. We executive search, IT staffing, we live and breathe that, you know, that whole side of interviewing, sourcing, finding pre-qualifying candidates and so forth. And, you know, a lot of points that you had covered are, you know, of utmost importance. Last but not least, you post quite often about different books, the resources that you read. I'm curious if, you know, what is currently right in front of you? What are you currently reading? And if there is one book that you could pick out that you could recommend or you always recommend to others, which one would that be?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, this is a hard question. This is, again, like, what's your favorite child?
We can always say, go to LoriRollison.com and you can see a post about that there.
I did. I just, as a matter of fact, you're right, John. I just published my top six books of 2019. It was hard to pick six, but I would say my favorite, I'll just tell you what I'm finishing reading and starting to read right now. There was a book that was just released in December of 2019 by Dror Poehling called Rethinking Real Estate. And he does such an articulate job at describing how technology and disruptive influences are affecting the different classes of real estate. And given real estate is such an important part of our economy, part of, you know, our profession, our financial industry, it's really fascinating how different classes of assets are being reimagined and reinvented with technology. So that one I'm actually rallying with our executive team around a workshop in February. So that's really cool. Another book that I just finished was The Infinite Mindset. I can't remember the author, but I think it's on one of my lists on my website, but I really love that because it was actually brought to my attention by our Canadian CFO. And, you know, CFOs and people in finance generally tend to be a little bit more left brain. And of course, I'm stereotyping. And she just loved this book. And I did, too, because it was a book that really spoke to her about being open to think beyond or what the perverse incentives are of strict processes and although all of that is important, but how do you think beyond the current process but keep the wheels on the bus and continue to operate your business? And I love that book spoke to her, and I read that, and sometimes, like, I've read books in all kinds of books on that same topic, but the fact that book reached that audience of stakeholders meant a lot to me. So I read that book and I really enjoyed it, and I loved the way that they explained it. So that was a good one, The Infinite Mindset. And then the third book, and I'm just about finished it, is a reread for me by a guy named Bernard Marr. And I just love this guy. He's so terrific. He does a lot around disruptive and innovations, but his real wheelhouse is around an artificial intelligence. He talks a lot about artificial intelligence case studies, which, again, appeals to the practical nature of me. So he's got a couple of books, Bernard Marr, the latest one on artificial intelligence. I'm just rereading it just so that I can frame some of the interviews I'm doing. But and then the other thing is I'm actually writing a book that I'll have released in 2020, I should say. Which is like a buffet menu of all of the 20 different disruptions that are changing everything in real estate. And it's just intended to be a mental snack around just some exposure before you dive into any one technology. And I talk about 3D printing and virtual reality and all of the 20 different influences that are affecting everything, quite frankly. But again, with my practical nature, showing examples of how it's actually been applied. So those are all in my reading wheelhouse right now.
That's great, and definitely thank you for sharing that. I do realize those are some tricky questions from perspective that you have so much, you read a lot, and then you had to narrow it down. So, thank you for that. Lori, you're very busy. I really appreciate your time to jump on with us on Ivy Podcast and share a lot of, the great information that you always post as well. Thank you, and I look forward to reconnecting with you in a couple of years and see how things have changed and where you're at the point. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for asking me to join you, and reach out anytime. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.